Good afternoon. Mike Dugan here. Bill Gustin hopefully will be joining us in a couple of minutes. He's having a little technical difficulties, but I'm here with you today on the Hump Day Hangout. First off, we'd like to say thank you to our sponsor, Key Hose. As everybody knows from listening to Bill talk about them, it's a great hose company, and we're glad to have them sponsoring us, and we'd like to thank Key Hose for doing that. And we appreciate it. And it's a great product. And we recommend you take it to the tests. Joining us today, we're going to have a couple people joining us today. We're going to be talking about fire prevention and some of the stuff that goes along with fire prevention. So joining us, Bill just logged on. We're going to have Jack Murphy. Morning, Jack.
Morning.
Or afternoon. I'm sorry.
Yeah, afternoon, good Jack. Afternoon here. Yeah.
Okay. Doug Keller. How you doing, Doug? Just say hello to everybody.
Thank you for asking me.
No problem. Jason Hobelman.
Hello.
Jason Hobelman. And we have the old man. We don't know if he's live or not. Can you hear us, Bill?
I can hear you fine. Do you hear me?
Yep. Yes, sir. Yep. Little. Sounds like you're going a little in the background in a cave there, but that's okay.
I'm in my cave. You got to give me a break because I'm 66. Yesterday was my birthday, but I think we've got our technical problems ironed out for the time being. And happy to be with you guys.
Well, happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Mike D. To commemorate Fire Prevention Week, which is not this week, but is a week before. That we would look at the fire company officer's responsibility for fire prevention and fire investigation. So I've asked the two best and brightest guys I know in for prevention, pre-fire planning. That would be you, Jack, and then Doug Keller is our bureau officer in charge of our investigators, and he's got extensive experience. My motivation is, Jack, you know, I were talking about this on the phone earlier today, is we have fire company officers and firefighters in operations that don't think that investigating and anything that has to do with fire prevention is their job, when in fact, we have a duty to act. You know, we raised our right hand and swore that we would protect our public from the ravages of fire. So everybody has to be involved in fire prevention. So I thought we would start off with Captain Mike explaining what they do in the FDNY. They're more engaged in at a company level with inspections than my department. And Jack, you had mentioned that in your state of New Jersey, you have to be state certified. And then I thought if we would do the same thing with Captain Doug in terms of a responsibility for the completion of a fire investigation. So, Mike, can you kind of, and Jack, can you kind of lead us in the direction of what the FDNY does in terms of company level inspections?
Sure. In the company level inspections, with the new system, you get buildings to go out and do. We go out three times a week to inspect buildings. It's either in the morning or the afternoon. It's either 10 to 1 or 1 to 4. And you go out and you inspect buildings in your neighborhood. There are companies that are never going to hit every building in their district in 10 years because there are so many smaller buildings and everything else. So what they do is they prioritize buildings. They prioritize them by their size, their occupancy. What they are. I mean, you have some of these companies in Midtown Manhattan that have a 90-story mixed occupancy use building. Just to inspect it would take you 10 hours, okay, to go through all of the things that we have to do. So sometimes we have to break these inspections up. We have to spend time on different things. Also, depending on the type of places you have in your district, public assembly, churches, You have theaters. We have guys in theater inspections who have to do theater inspections. So we set up a system. The system now gives you what has to be done in the next couple of weeks. It gives you a little bit of flexibility, but it allows you to go out and see what buildings have to be inspected in your district. Comes up usually on a multiple dwelling type of residence in a building. We're not going to get to them every 5 to 7 years because of the things. But what's going to trigger inspections into a building would be if there's a renovation, if there's a construction, if there's a complaint, if somebody says that they are using the building now as a rooming house. We have had some of the buildings I've been in, the crazy stuff where they split the apartment in two halves. They've cut it from the ceiling and you walk in the front door and you either crawl up a stair, a ladder, or go in and you're at 4 feet and you go in and they sleep in these places. Basement occupancies. We don't allow people to live in a basement without secondary means of egress. So we go to some of these places and they've turned them into rooming houses. People don't have. So it depends on what we are going out to inspect. It depends on the building type, everything else. But we go out approximately 3 times a week, depending on fire duty and all the other stuff that are in there, the weather conditions. You know, we get cold weather, we get pouring rain like we had yesterday with the remnants of Delta. We're not going to send the guys out walking up onto the roof. We have a whole checklist that we're supposed to go through. Buildings under construction are another one that's a big thing. We go out and check them as soon as they come out of the ground, and then we start doing a monthly inspection on those things. We also have units in fire prevention that are going out and doing the same things. So the company officer is really the guy who's going out and seeing what's changing in his district. And he is going to be the guy that's going to start if something looks strange, especially if we go out on a fire, you go to a food on the stove, you go to a CO call, something else, and something's wrong with the building. You're going to go there and talk about it. I had one when I was a captain. We went to a local supermarket. We went into the supermarket for a smoking conveyor belt to move the stuff up. We went upstairs. They were building apartments above in the almost like the front of the supermarket. No secondary means of egress. They were going to put people going down the staircase with nothing in there. They were going to put 5 families in there. And we looked at this and like, how are they going to get out in a fire? There was no secondary means of egress. Had to vacate it, had to stop work order, had to get the Department of Buildings involved and everything else. So depending on what you see and what you do, I mean, as a company officer, there are certain times you go into a building for a carbon monoxide leak, for even for a fire, for a smoke detector, for a medical emergency. You see stuff going on in that building and you are like, holy mackerel, wait a second, we got to drill this up. I was talking to a friend of mine in Texas the other day. They had a group go out on a run at 3:00 a.m. and they saw this building and something didn't look right. After they loaded the patient up, the company officer stayed there with his daughter to ask a couple of questions. They had secret panels in the wall that opened up to a safe space upstairs, no windows, in a dormant space above where they could hide in an emergency. And in Texas, they also had a full basement below that is very unusual. Well, these guys at 3:00 a.m. are taking the time to inspect this building. That's what a good company does. They go out and they find out. If it's something unusual, we find out. When you go back, you have to enter it into the computer system. You have to enter it into our database. And then for us, you have to send out all the first alarm units a letter with the address, with the condition, before it even gets to the computer printout, what you found. So you call the dispatcher up and give them the address and you say, you know, 123 Main Street, who goes? You get, Engine 1, engine 2, and engine 3. Ladder 1, ladder 2, ladder 3 is the fast truck. Rescue 1, squad 1, battalion 1, division 1. You're going to write those 9 letters. It's the same letter, but it's each addressed to a different company. This is what we have at this building. And this goes up on a bulletin board in the firehouse. Okay, it's an unusual building.
We we find a lot of violations on medical calls, buildings we would never have gotten into. And, well, you know, departments have gotten themselves in trouble because they have a multiple loss of life, of civilian life. And somebody's going to ask the question, why didn't the fire department do anything about this? Where was the fire prevention bureau? And fire chief says, well, no, we weren't aware that this was an illegal assembly. When in fact the fire department had been there a number of times on medical calls. So and on Miami-Dade, if that happens after hours, in order for us to have a state certified inspector, we would call one of Captain Doug's guys, one of the investigators, on duty investigators, who is a state of Florida certified firefighter. Jack.
And now, can I ask a question on that, Bill?
Yes, sir.
If you go there on a medical emergency, because I know people are going to be upset if we're vacating a building or something else after a medical emergency, do you then wait for that guy to show up? You do not leave because you've been invited in. You do not leave the premise, because if you leave and come back and knock on the door, they don't have to let you in.
Mike, I remember you telling me about this. We do not have a hard and fast anything in writing on that. But, Mike, we've talked about this before on a previous show, and I get that. Now, as far as fire investigations, yes, we definitely will not leave until the investigation, because we lose the chain of evidence. And Doug can speak more on that. But there seems to me, Jack, is it just me? Is it just my department? Is it the fire service in general that there seems to be a disconnect between the personnel in fire prevention and the people in operations that are actually running the fire calls? Would I be right about that, or maybe I'm just jaded or cynical?
It depends, Bill, on each department and the relationship and how that works. And today we have no excuse for that, because we could send our information over the computer, push it out to the companies. Even if you just put a little blurb there, been in the building, notice this, send it out to the local company or send it to dispatch and have them do that. The thing is, Bill, is that, you know, you just can't, we're not wearing one hat. All right. If I have EMS going there, fire prevention and fire companies, we're all the same department. So why can't we just share the information we see? If you see something flagrant, all right, if I go in for an EMS call and, like Mike said, well, maybe someone's got to stay there. Maybe you call the backup ambulance or something and someone stays there until the company arrives. But if you see something flagrant, like I was just in a major city over Friday. All right. I go into an area. They have a hash block on an exit door. All right. You know, that's something that you see. Tell somebody about it and make those changes. The thing is that, you know, We're all bells and whistles. We love going to runs, but no one wants to look at the mundane stuff. The mundane stuff is what makes the fire ground safer. The more we know about it, the better the fire ground becomes during operations. There isn't that much. They take a look at the book and it's like, oh, look how big this is. Well, just why don't we just break it down into smaller sections? All right. Here's a couple. What are some general precautions against fire? I think we should all know that. Does this place need an emergency plan? Some do, some don't. Here's a big one. These are my two favorites, what I call, I'm using the IFC, Chapter 5, Fire Department Features. This is your bailiwick, companies. You know, access, fire access to the building, premises ID, knock boxes, hazards to the first responder, your water supply. Do they have fire equipment access? How about labeling what I call utilities in the building? You know, in the basement, you know, electrical shutoff, off stair C, give me a fixed position. These are all things that companies can use to their advantage. Building systems. Mike and I know, you know, our building systems in the high rises in New York are off the chart. All right. But if you go into a smaller building, now I see horizontal high rises. You ever see the Amazon buildings they're putting up now? Or how about Tesla? The thing is like 6 football fields long. So these are things you have to take a look at and work with. And the other thing is, what are the fire protection features in the building? What Bill brought up Bill, I'm sorry. What Mike brought up before is about timing and how do you go out. A lot of companies, when the electronic version of stuff, are using algorithms, all right, based on fire protection systems in the building. Well, if it's fully sprinkled, has a fire alarm and other passive things, maybe I won't do it every year. Maybe it's every 3 years. So you go on cycles with that. So these are all things that they should open, fire companies should open, fire department should open their eyes up more about it. It's been there and no one really wants to jump the gun. And I had this conversation with Bill earlier. I says, you know, a few years ago in the fire service, we kept honing in on back to basics. All right, we're doing hazmat, we're doing this, we're doing all these specialties. We need to get back to basics. Well, fire prevention and codes were always in the basic format, but no one wants to pick it up. I'm serious about that, guys. I talk to everybody in departments. Yeah. I get the song and dance deal. And what I'm trying to say to them, this is your response. This is protecting you. The more you do things up front, the better off you're going to be and not have these catastrophes that we're seeing out there with these buildings that are non-inspected. And we had several of them, you know, in the country recently.
Recently. Jack, when my dad was promoted to lieutenant on the Chicago Fire Department, he was transferred right into the Fire Prevention Bureau, and he was there almost 2 years. And of course, he would have rather been doing fire duty. He came from a busy company. He liked that type of fire duty. But in retrospect, he said it made him a much better fire officer. I mean, we've got firefighters in the field, and you know, I'm kind of air my own department's dirty laundry because I know it applies to other departments as well. So officers that don't know the difference between a supervisory signal or a trouble alarm, they don't know how to read a fire alarm control panel. They're not familiar at all with NFPA 13 for sprinklers and NFPA 14. And then how many buildings do we have that the occupancy, say multifamily or assembly, is totally predicated on a properly operating and inspecting expected sprinkler system? And if the system isn't working, you know, the whole building was designed around a properly operating sprinkler system. And there seems to be that disconnect between fire prevention and the people that are actually going to fires and operations.
Yes, there is. And the thing is that, you know, when we study for promotional tests, we study building codes and fire codes, right? And some of that goes by the wayside once we get into those ranks. All right. So those are the things that once you do it, and Mike hits the nail on the head, is that you go out, you do these things. They're going out several times a week trying to get things done, which is very arduous in Midtown Manhattan. But the idea is that just send a clear message that this is your fire ground. This is the way you tame the environment. All right. By going out and you see these violations, whatever it is, take care of it. But also when you go in there, do that. Inspections are one thing, and Mike brought it up. You can go out and you could say we're just showing up. That's one way of doing it. They can deny you access. If they do that, you have to go through the warrant process. I've done that several times, all right? But it's a process, all right? And that's why I like what Mike said, stay in the building and bring in the code people and everything and take care of it. You know, so you can't give that up. And Doug will talk about the investigation stuff too. But it is the family of the fire service. So we have to make use of everybody because there's too much out there for us to cover.
Yes. Jason, Chief Jason Hobelman, you're a chief of a district, fire protection district, I believe. And is that considered an authority having jurisdiction? And what is your department's authority for code enforcement?
It is an authority having jurisdiction, and we do have a fire marshal that heavy on the prevention side as far as codes. We do have fire code and building code ordinances. In fact, he's in the process of updating them for 2021. From new construction, we do not do any residential. That's really per state law. because if there's in the state of Missouri, if there's a jurisdiction like a city that does residential, the fire districts cannot do them. Now we can do multifamily inspections and code enforcement, but single and double family we don't do. But we do from the building to renovations and on through routine business inspections. We do have authority over jurisdiction over that.
How involved are your fire companies in code enforcement inspections?
I'm going to air our dirty laundry like you did. We traditionally, the engine companies have not been heavily involved in routine fire inspections. We're looking at working those into their daily routines, although we've not come up with a full agreement. Our fire marshal is working on, we've got a fairly new fire marshal. He's been in there about 3 years, 4 years, and he's kind of reconfiguring that. But I agree 100% with what Jack said. And that number one, the engine companies need to be involved in these from an operational perspective, not just from a prevention standpoint, access points, unique features, hose links, number of exits, and you know, different occupancy types. And to your point, Bill, about the sprinkler systems, you know, a building built in 1972 that was sprinkling a grocery store that's now turned into carpet storage or some other thing that may have missed a code cycle early on or some sort, or we all know that they'll do these projects under the cover of night if they can. And with our district being as big as it is and not having a robust prevention system, it's easy to miss some things sometimes. And that's where the company level is critical, not only to the prevention side, but being aware from an operational standpoint and keeping your people safe and being effective with your tactics. And I agree with what your dad had told you. I had the opportunity at my volunteer combination department to be the fire marshal there for 20 years. And I would say unequivocally that it made me a better fire officer, without a doubt, just from some of the small nuances that you don't always think about when you're just focused on operations.
Yeah. Jason brought up a good point about one and two families. It's also, if you have an apartment building, you could do all the common areas, but you're not allowed entry into their apartment unless they give you permission. All right. From that standpoint, the other thing too, is that these are my tricks. And I'll get, if I go into a large building, all right, I'll ask all these, where do you want to start your inspection? Let's just pick a 10 story, multiple occupancy. Where would you want to start your inspection? Someone give me a feedback.
Ooh.
At the front door, outside.
Okay. Anybody else?
I would say outside.
Yeah, outside. You could do 360 and, you know, things like that. The other thing too is that what is it telling you on the outside of the building? How is it maintained? You take a look at that building, the maintenance on the outside. When I go into it, when I look at a building and I see a polished FDC connection, I like that. Little things. My first thing in a large building, take me to your mechanical space. Take me to your furnace room. Why am I going there? What I see on the outside and I open up the furnace room and I can eat off the floor, this is going to be a nice inspection. All right. So go behind the scene areas in the building first. You saw outside, you saw the entrance, you do a 360. If you go to the roof too, I love going to the roof of a building and looking down. You know, some buildings you can't. All right. But you need to take that and work it into your needs. All right. The other thing too is that you break the company up. You don't have to all say as a group. Give them little assignments. You look at fire protection system today. You look at stairwells. You hear what I'm saying? Break them up. Everybody doesn't have to stay as a group. We all have radios, yes? Mike? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Right. But, I agree 100%.
But we huddle. Four or five, six people in some cases. Well, give them assignments and mix them up. Don't always have someone do the same thing. I'm pretty sure you gather more information in a shorter time frame too. All right. So those are just some takeaways with that. And in my take on knocking on the door, I was with an owner of the building, and we knocked on the door, and I said, I like to see a smoke detector. I identified myself, and the person on the other side of the door, you can come in, but he can't, the owner. I said, I'm walking away. He goes, no, you can come in. As I went into the apartment, the owner tried to come in, and there was a little scuffle. So who did I call right away, Mike? The cops. So you're trying to do the right thing, and things, you know, people just turn on you at times. So be aware of that.
Just about at our halfway mark, I want to thank our sponsor, Key. That's keyhose.com. It's a very easy endorsement for me. Right outside the walls of this building where I'm at right now, they're dragging Key over steps and over windowsills and across the pavement and putting it to a test. When you get a new piece of equipment, you want to see how robust it is. Give it to recruit training, because it'll be used on a daily basis. So I always say in these hangouts, take the Key challenge, and the Key challenge is try to kink Key Combat Ready. They're a combat sniper now, and they're the true IDs, the true ID hose. So don't go cheap on hose. There's various grades of Key. They're all good. But remember, your hose line is your lifeline, and you can't do better than Key. I want to kind of turn the page here and talk about responsibility for investigations. And I'm going to ask Captain Doug Keller, what does he expect? Let me rephrase it. Doug, you're going to go to a officer development class for newly promoted lieutenants. What would you be telling those new officers about their responsibilities for fire investigation?
Well, funny you should say that, because I think it's next week we have an officer development class of brand new lieutenants. So, and then there's another one starting in November. So we've got two groups of 20 to 30 brand new officers that need to learn that there's more than just putting water on a fire. And I would love to say that we had, a week or two to talk about fire prevention, but the reality is there's a lot of people pulling different directions, and we end up with about 4 hours. So in that time, the first thing I open up with is, you know, since they're all new lieutenants, they're young. And they're excited, and they're happy to be firefighters still, and they're going up to that first level. And I explained to them that they may not have realized it to this point, but even though everybody in the room, the 20 or so in the room, think that fire is cool and it's a great job and all that type of stuff, the other 99.9% of the world doesn't think fire is cool. They're scared to death of it, and they want it stopped. And the best way to stop the fire, the best way to put the fire out, is to stop it from happening in the first place. So they, now that they're moving up into the front seat, it is their job to help stop the scourge of fire, you know, that the fire that has been, you know, the scourge of humanity for thousands of years. And we do have a good system here in our fire department where when the officer gets back from a call, whether it's EMS or fire related or anything, if they see something, and they don't know that much about code, but if they see something they think is odd, like somebody mentioned earlier, I think Mike said something about a building he saw, and there was a lock on an exit door. So, you know, the fire officer might look at that and say, you know, I have no idea what code that's breaking, but that don't look right. So they can get back to the station, and while they're doing their report, there's just a little button that says request inspection. And by just clicking that, they have then sent the email to all of the fire prevention supervisors, and they will assign it to the correct inspector. The inspector will go out and deal with it, and then send an email back to that officer saying, hey, you were right, we checked it, it's, you know, a violation, we gave them a civil violation notice and blah, blah, blah. So that draws in the officers into being, you know, more of a well-rounded fire officer and a fire department employee, as to these little steps of getting them to see the fire department as not just a place to deal with the emergency after it happens, but to try to reduce risk in the community. And that's a huge job that the fire departments and the fire service is moving towards, risk reduction.
Well, you must see trends. For instance, there's a lot of talk now about lithium ion batteries. I just sent Jack a video from our mutual friend, Phil Paff, in Australia. They had a energy storage system, I believe it's called a Tesla Powerwall. And this thing looks like fireworks went off. And are you seeing trends with, I'm just using lithium ion batteries for an example, that maybe you didn't see before, and you identify things that maybe through public education or some other means we can prevent fires?
Sure. You know, you can just go on YouTube and Google or, you know, type in lithium ion fires and see all sorts of interesting fires. But the truth is, it's way more common than people even believe, than they even know. They hear the term and they think, oh yeah, I heard about that on the news one night. I would say that our fire department down here in South Florida probably goes to a lithium ion runaway heating overcharging fire at least once a week. Somebody on our fire department, some fire truck. Usually they're small, they're found early, but sometimes if nobody's home, it'll end up burning the whole house down. So it is, it's the hoverboards that are a big one. Cell phones, cigarettes, the electronic cigarettes. I've been on multiple electronic cigarettes that have severely burned individuals because the battery explodes when it's in their pocket or even when they're smoking it. Laptops, there's anything that has the lithium ion battery in now has the potential to cause a fire. Now, it's certainly one of those situations where if you buy a well-known named brand device and stick with the well-made products and batteries, there's less of a chance. But when, let's say my laptop the battery starts to fade, and instead of going over and buying a new Apple battery for $300 or whatever it is, I go online and get a battery that's $39 and install that. Well, then, you know, you got a better chance that you're not getting such a stout product. But yeah, we see these trends, and through our reporting system, it goes up, and we end up getting calls from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the CPSC. I'll get calls from them frequently about the Ford SCDS fires, the smoking in bed fires. Anytime there's a type of product that is causing significant ongoing fires and property damage, there are people putting those statistics together, and that's how products end up being recalled. And so again, that's why I tell these new lieutenants, when you're doing that report, you've got to say what caught on fire. If you go in and you say it was there was a fire in the corner of the living room, we put it out and we left, that's a whole lot different than saying the the hoverboard was plugged in and all the fire came from that, that piece of information will be compiled by a government agency that's then can have teeth when they want to try to make sure these products are better. Product failures have to be reported from the ground level so that they are dealt with at the legislative level. And that's why, that's just, let me just say that that's why fire investigations here in our department is in the fire prevention division. Because the reason we investigate fires is to try to make sure they don't happen again. Whether it's a person that did it and we can help get that person off the streets, or a product that did it and our investigation can help make sure that that product is dealt with appropriately.
Doug?
You know, what comes to my mind is the open neutral, the combination of the errant voltage, the open neutral, and an insufficient ground, where if we don't identify that, we've left that building with the, we have not mitigated the cause of the fire. They're going to have another one.
Yeah. And Bill, Doug brings up a good point about reports. Most of the National Code hearings, they all say, what's your reports on these things and fires? How many fires did you have with this product? Or any system in that? They're all, the industry is challenging us for that. You're dealing with the lightweight wood, they're challenging you all the time. So your whole idea is the reports, these NIFRI reports, like Doug said, play an important role here. Let me ask Doug a question. Doug, on inspection, on investigations, about 2 years ago when the NFPA updated their fire investigations, it came across my desk that they were looking for some training for fire officers in overhaul. Did that ever make the standard?
Are you talking about 921, the
yes,
fire
sir.
Investigation?
Yes.
So it's the brand new one just came out about
okay.
a month ago.
All right.
So I can't tell you that I've read it cover to cover, just, but
but I thought it was a good thing for at least getting to, like you're trying to do with the new lieutenants. Say, you know, you go in here, you know, limited overhaul, do what you have to do. But you might have to preserve this thing for the investigation. So we'll have a discussion later about that, all right, Doug?
We know as fire investigators
yeah.
that the fire has to be put out
yep.
first. But there's nothing worse than walking into a room and every piece of drywall mm-hmm. is on the ground and the fire was only in a corner. So, you know, what we do is we look for fire effects. What did the fire do? How can we follow those effects and those patterns to where it started? And if they're all gone, then it just makes it more mm-hmm. difficult.
Yes.
But, you know, there's a big fear in our industry, I think. I'll just say in our department, of a fire officer putting a fire out, leaving, and then 3 hours later,
yes.
the place is on fire again. You know, obviously we call it down here a rekindle. I don't know what the
yeah.
whole world, but nobody wants that to happen. It's
No.
Yeah, it's an embarrassing situation, and you can spend your whole career not living that down.
Yeah.
So they might
do that 4 hours.
But we deal with what we get when we get there.
We spent 4.5 hours one day looking for a blown-in insulation outlet that was, we cut the roof, we were looking with the, because the blown insulation, we couldn't use the thermal imaging camera, we could smell it, we knew it, we spent 4.5 hours before we finally found it. But we're not walking away, because you know, you walk away, 15 minutes later, that place is gonna be roaring.
Yeah.
Yep. And can I just say something, Bill?
Yes, sir.
With investigation and inspection, they go together. And what happens is when you go out and do an inspection, sometimes you're going to find some of this new stuff. We talked about lithium ion batteries. In New York City, they now have rooms called ESS and uninterruptible power supplies, battery backups. You know, some of them are 4,000, 5,000 pounds of lithium ion. New York City has seen such an influx of this that we now have to have a certificate of fitness holder if we have lithium ion batteries that are over 500 pounds, over 50 gallons of lead acid, valve regulated lead acid, whatever, they have to have somebody, a certificate of fitness, that inspects these things once a day. They have to do a walkthrough and check these battery systems out. And if you didn't know that that was in there from the inspection, you would never be able to say, well, you got to have somebody checking this. So finding these things raises your awareness as a company officer, makes you a better company officer, and also trains you. Like some of those lithium ion batteries, some of the old cell phone sites with the batteries and everything else, those things were so dangerous with the hydrogen. Now they have to have the fans. They have to exchange the air within 1 hour and all these other rules that have come into effect because of things that we've had. But if you weren't out there looking at these things in your district and finding them, you weren't doing your company and your citizens a service.
And the other thing, Mike, with our high rise is when we have the building information card, that goes under hazmat.
Absolutely.
So we have an idea that that's there already too. But the thing is that there's other alternative sources too. There's CoGen, which is a high gas pressure line that now the buildings I dealt in Manhattan, I've seen in colleges across the United States. I had one building, a CoGen, high energy gas in a furnace that produced alternative energy and had 4,160 volt lines coming out the back. It did the electric for the entire complex, three blocks long. It was a Midtown hospital. Okay. Colleges have that. All right. Oh, yeah. In Las Vegas, they have that. Now here's the thing that again, looking at these things, ask the right question. This is the thing. I go into a building that has I see this CoGen, and what for me, it was taken apart because it was being maintained. If whatever they did, they had the whole thing open. That's when I saw a jet engine inside the furnace. Okay? Our actual jet engine runs this thing. The whole thing's encapsulated, all right? There's suppression in it. You can't open for 24 hours if it goes off. There are things outside that you have that will detect the fire. It's called a flame detector. And what does that mean? You have an actual flame. That's when it sets off the fire alarms. So I go into the area and I asked the gentleman, how do you shut this off? He said, the solenoids off the computer. I said, yeah, okay, you have a computer glitch like you had today, Mike. Well, how do I shut this off? Where's the manual? They looked at me. I was like an idiot. Where's the manual shut off for this gas? Oh, you want to go to gas alley? Oh, let's go outside. Went in outside between the buildings and there's the gas, which I like. Everything's painted in yellow. I can trace the gas line going into the furnace. My next question was, how do I manually shut that off? They went and said, oh, there's a wrench over there that we have chained up. We just unlock it. I said, go get the wrench. Guys, the wrench did not fit. It was too small. And that's what you do when you go to these things. Test them out. Say, okay, I agree with you. I was very satisfied. I saw the manual. Okay? You can note that. But ask them to take the next step further. Before I arrive, they're going to be trying to do this. Okay, I bring my wrenches and everything. They don't. Okay, just a little tidbits.
Jason, in the state of Florida, not every department has an investigator. Many departments rely on the state fire marshal's office. And occasionally we do too. In the state of Missouri, do you interact with the state fire marshal's office?
Yeah, so... it's really dependent upon where you are in the state. For us in St. Louis County, Cliff, our fire marshal, will do the dare I say, routine or you know, everyday things that are pretty obvious as to what they are. But anything that gets out of that scope goes to the St. Louis County Bomb and Arson Squad. So the county comes in. Now, where I was in Sullivan, if there's a fatality, that's a whole different. Or like a gas explosion, then you get the state, you get a lot of different agencies, ATF people involved. But when I was in Sullivan, it was very common to have the state fire marshal come out and do the majority of our investigations just due to lack of resources. And so it's very common in the more rural parts of the state. The more urban areas have their own, resources in that specific demographic area.
And you guys have a great state fire marshal.
Yes, yes.
Tim Beam, right?
Tim Beam, he's fantastic, yeah.
He's great. What a great guy.
Yeah, their biggest problem is retention, like any other government employee. But the folks that do it, they do a good job. They cover huge areas. You know, they work tirelessly. And, we have a very good fire marshal.
I got a question for Doug with ATF. I remember when I was I was IC at obviously an arson fire, incendiary fire, an abandoned warehouse. It's one of my most memorable fires, the infamous Smirnoff vodka fire. So this is a bonded warehouse, Southern Wine and Spirits. And just, it looked like baked Alaska, cascading, that sprinklers would wet the bottles, the cases of Smirnoff, and then you'd stand down and you were standing in bluish flame. But my point is, ATF got there, and he asked who the incident commander was, and I said, it's me. I said, I've got our investigators on the way. He says, well, you can cancel your investigators. Well, that's not our procedure. I've got to follow our procedure. Captain, we got it. It's a bonded warehouse. We got it. Is the fire out? Yeah. Okay. Don't even clean up. We got it. And we appreciate you, what you do, but time for you guys to leave the scene. But Doug, you have a pretty good relationship with ATF, don't you?
Yeah. First of all, I'll stand toe to toe with anybody that it's my scene, unless they're wearing a sidearm. As soon as they show up with guns and start saying, it's their scene, I defer. I say, all right, no problem. I'll live to dig another fire somewhere else. But this is something that's really actually kind of interesting to me. Firefighter fire investigators versus law enforcement fire investigators. I mean, I'm sure we could spend hours talking about stuff, hopefully with, you know, some law enforcement investigators. Our fire department here down in Miami, we are not sworn law enforcement. We're firefighters that promote and go to extra classes, and I don't even call myself a fire investigator, even though I'm the supervisor of the Fire Investigation Bureau. I am, and I'm proud to be, an origin and cause investigator. So, and I like it that way because per that book I held up a little earlier, the NFPA 921, that maps out that investigating a fire is a scientific endeavor. And if I don't have, I'm glad that we don't have to worry about making a case or, you know, pleasing the prosecutor and all that type of stuff. We stick to the science. And when we think that there's something that could be turned over to the police for a criminal side, then we call in either, you know, a city police department, if it's there, the county police arson, the state fire marshal covers some of the areas, including the universities and that type of thing. And the ATF, like most federal law enforcement, really only comes in when they're asked. Now, the fire you were talking about, that was an alcohol fire. So I guess that does automatically go to them. But the relationship that we have with the ATF and with the state fire marshal is that, you know, we have limited capability to do some of the big giant fires. So our bread and butter is you know, house fires type of thing. But if we get a warehouse that has, you know, the Twin T's have collapsed, you know, we kind of realize that we've met our match. So we request help from the state and the ATF, and they come. And because we have these, we have quarterly meetings that we get together and talk about trends in fire investigation in the area. We help with the training of new ATF agents when they come in. So we have that good relationship with them. So it never is a a mano, this is my scene versus your scene, we've already set up those good relationships and we work together on a regular basis so that when a scene is big enough that outsiders do need to come in, we have those people's phone numbers. You know, we already have that personal relationship. So, and I'm an advocate of that. And I'm the same way with private fire investigators. We don't collaborate with private fire investigators because that would be inappropriate, but we can work side by side. If we get to a scene and it is such a huge loss that it's going to take multiple days and we can't dedicate fire trucks to sit there for 2-3 weeks at a time, then we can contact the insurance company and say, hey, this is your building, it's your loss. You want to send a fence company over here to put up some security, that type of stuff. So yes, I'm protective of my area, but I also think that cooperation with other agencies is definitely the way to go.
Doug, for instance, the gas chromatograph, whose agency do you send samples to? Or is that a private company?
The state of Florida has a lab, and part of the state statutes is that it's available to whomever wants to use it. I mean, not that I can go up and use it, I don't know how, but we send all of our evidence to the state lab, and it's part of their directive to do it. And you know, we don't have to pay for it. It's budgeted in their budget. So and it's the same case for state fire marshals coming to our scene. They won't show up uninvited, but all I got to do is pick up a phone and say, hey, we need a little extra help, and they'll be there within an hour. So the state has mandates, just like Jason was saying, that they do most of their work in the more rural areas because of budget constraints for those people. We have such a huge department and so many fires. We have our own fire investigation unit, so we don't have to call on them very often. But if we do call, state law says they have to come.
Captain Mike, your fire marshals and the FDNY, they do carry sidearms. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Our fire marshals, believe it or not, have more power than our New York City police, because fire marshals can do unwarranted searches if they think there's a life safety hazard in a building, storage of fireworks or something like that. Our police officers, they have police officer status, but they also have additional things that we can do, other things with our fire marshals. So it's a separate bureau. It's a promotion from firefighter to fire marshal. And then they have a supervising fire marshal. But that's, some guys choose that as a career path, because a lot of those guys end up after retiring from the job being private fire investigators, because they do this. They investigate origin and cause and death, the manner of death, what happened. And they work very closely with the police, but they also look for, you know, they do juvenile fire starters program, they do all the other stuff, and they look for, you know, arson for hire, for people who are doing things like that. So it's a huge thing.
Yes. I remember that after Hurricane Andrew, we had quite a few state fire marshal, what do you call them, deputies, I guess, because we had so many fires. This is back in 1992. And they were a big help to us, because we did have so many fires. And we had a lot of incendiary fires, people that their house just wasn't damaged enough for them to get the money that they thought they were going to need. A lot of them was because the electricity had been off for months in some cases. Lots of fires following a power outage like that. But we really appreciated the help that we got from the state fire marshals, because our investigators just were swamped at the time. let's see how we're doing on time. We've got just a little bit left, and I think we have enough for just another final say. I can't stress enough that if you are a well-rounded and you consider yourself a professional fire officer, that doesn't mean you could be a volunteer and be professional. I mean professional. You consider yourself a well-rounded professional fire officer, then fire prevention and fire investigation is your job. You do have a duty to act. And if you're not doing it, then you're abrogating your authority and you're actually neglecting your job. So when we raised that hand and we promised to protect the citizens of, in my case, Miami-Dade County, it, like Doug said, not everybody thinks fires, that was a great analogy, Doug. Not everybody thinks fires are neat. 90% of the people that are not firefighters, they don't like fires. And our primary job is to, the best way to fight the fire is to prevent it from happening. So, but sometimes the lessons are learned, Captain Mike, we commemorate the Chicago fire. Did Chicago learn something from that? Yeah. Closely spaced wood frame buildings packed together, just packed together, is a breeder of conflagrations. But sometimes those lessons either were not learned or they were forgotten when we look at modern day apartment complexes. I mean, that's what they are. No, it's the same thing. It's
as so a company officer, Bill, as a company officer, I yes, say sir. Fire inspection. To my guys, I used to say fire inspection is a walk in the neighborhood ruined by paperwork, but I'll do the paperwork.
I like that.
Yeah, you're going out to visit where you're going to fight fires. You're getting informed. It's a walk in the neighborhood ruined by paperwork, and I'll do the paperwork.
Excellent. I like that. Jason, any final thoughts?
No, I think the biggest takeaway is to number one, and I don't have the links with me, but there are several resources online for free training and free classes on a lot of these basic things that we're talking about through different formats. I don't have them all with me, but I know we've used them and I know my fire marshal does. But it's like Mike said, you've got to get out. And what I have found is that when you can relate what you do on the fire ground to what's going on in that building when it's not on fire, the more effective you're going to be. And the only way to do that is to get out inside these buildings, no matter if you call it an inspection or you call it a familiarity or whatever it is, have a foundational guideline of what you're going to look at. But the more you know before you get there, when it's discretionary time's limited, the more effective you're going to be and the more effective you are, the safer it's going to be for victims and our members.
Doug, any final thoughts?
Well, I'm glad Jason said that because the International Association of Arson Investigators is one of the two main investigator organizations, and they have a website called CFITrainer.net. CFI stands for, I guess, Certified Fire Investigator. CFITrainer.net, and it's free. And they have probably by now 30, 40 tutorials on investigation type things to learn, and it's just videos. They give you a reading list. And if you go in there, you sign up. Again, you sign up just so they know who you are, but it's free. And you can go through all sorts of courses and learn more about the fire investigation if that's what you'd like.
I'm very proud of our investigators. In fact, for all of you arsonists out there that are thinking about coming and doing an insurance job in Miami-Dade County, not a good place to start a fire, because chances are you're going to get caught by one of our investigators. You're going to get caught. So you're better off going to some other jurisdiction. Jack, any final thoughts?
Again, the well-rounded fire officer, I think a lot of us said, is one who dabbles both in suppression and in codes and prevention. The thing here is that the more you go into the building, like Mike said, the more you're going to try to retain, particularly when you have an operation coming down, you know, for a fire event. But think of beyond fire. What about these all hazard threats that we're dealing with? You know, chemical releases, all this other stuff that's going on, bomb threats in the buildings. So you need to know construction things. You need to have an idea of building systems. The more you know, my suggestion for new officers and current officers is try to stay ahead of the curve on all the changes coming down with new building systems. There, for everything is coming out there. It's coming at us left and right, very fast. We also need to understand that fire prevention, fire companies should get more involved in the code process. In the ICC process, like Miami-Dade, you have 12 votes. Do you realize that? You have 12 votes in the process. You could do this remotely. New York City has 12 votes remotely. We need to have those votes hear us and support us on the floor when we go there. This is, everybody's relying on the national organizations, National State Fire Marshal, the IFF, the National Volunteers. That's a small group. How many fire departments are out there? Everyone has ownership here. Everyone. There is a process to do that. The other thing, take advantage of NFPA. If you're a member of the fire service, you want to sit on the committee, they may pay 80% of you to go there. All right? So take a look at that and get more involved in it and stay on the cutting edge with all this stuff coming out. And I'm dealing with it every day, guys, and I still can't keep up with it. All right? Everybody be safe out there. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank Doug Keller and Jack Murphy. You are our subject matter experts, and you certainly did not disappoint.
Thanks for the
And it's always better to prevent fires, but if they do occur, I would be using key hose. How is that for a plug right there? Yeah. I would be using key hose. My favorite is combat ready, but there are other grades and styles. But again, I want to thank Key for sponsoring this for us every month. I think this was we took a kind of a mundane topic, and I don't know. I thought we handled it pretty well. It made it kind of interesting. At least this is what but I can walk around and look at a suppression system, and I'll say to the guys that I'm with, hey, I wonder what normal people think are interesting and exciting. But that's just me. That's just you. And we're all geeks of fire prevention and protection. So until next month, my brothers, thank you so much for participating. Thank you, Key. And everybody stay healthy, stay safe, and God bless.